Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Borough Market Podcast, featuring the second of Borough Talks, the summer series of public debates presented by Borough Market, which explores some of the most interesting and important issues relevant to today's food world. In this episode, we're discussing the influence of the media and how it can help your food business. Food writer Sybil Kapoor leads a panel of experts from across media platforms, from television to Instagram. Before we meet the panellists, I ask some of the audience why they're here and what they're expecting from the evening.
I was actually here for the previous talk on cookbooks, and I work in media and communications in the food industry, so I thought it'd be interesting to kind of see how those things are coming together, and particularly what's influencing what people eat and what they think about what they eat.
I have a food stall, and I'm interested in to see the talkies. And I have an Instagram account, and I think it would help me to get new followers.
What's your business?
It's called Agua na Boca, Agua na Boca London. I sell Brazilian delicacies on a tricycle.
Terrific, so you're hoping to learn something today.
Yes, I hope so.
I'm here to help understand how social media can help my writing ambitions.
Are you a food writer?
Yes. I would describe myself as an embryonic food writer, having escaped the corporate slavery.
Oh, nice one. Thank you.
I have ambitions of starting a food business. So I'm allergic to dairy and a number of other things. So there is a gap in my market. So I could
tell
it.
It's
in theory, it will be pre-filled dairy and gluten-free pasta that you can buy in a supermarket. I just saw this online and thought it'd be really interesting.
Essentially, this one dragged me along and it looked really interesting. So what I think I'm getting out of it, I'm going to learn about food and why we eat what we do, if it's not our explicit choice to do so.
We have our own business called Marketing Foods, and we work with lots of artisan producers and chefs, and we're very interested to learn a bit more about how to further create awareness of those fantastic producers.
Lovely. What are you hoping to get from the panel of experts tonight?
A bit of exciting insight, a bit of fresh thinking.
Susan Lowe, Deputy Editor of Delicious Magazine, how exciting to have you here. What are you expecting from tonight?
Well, these talks, I've been to quite a few of them. They're always really, really interesting. They've got a great panel. This one is more geared towards people, I think, who are in the business. So it's about what food media can do for your food business. So I'm not in the food business. I'm in the business about the food business. So I'm really kind of all ears to hear what people have to say. It should be a pretty good debate.
And so to the panel of experts. Food writer and broadcaster Sybil Kapoor, Instagrammer Millie Kenny Ryder, food TV producer Pete Lawrence, winner of the 2016 series of The Apprentice, Alana Spencer, and food historian Jane Levy. What do they think media can do for food?
Personally, for me, I think what media can do for food is actually allow you to actually create ideas and really change the way people perceive food. So for me, it's a very empowering thing. It's something where you can put forward like seeds of ideas and opportunities for other people so they discover something new or they think about something in a new way. Well, writing is always intrinsic to food culture. There's no question of that. And I think what's interesting also is actually that things like e-books are declining and printed books are increasing in sales compared to cookbooks. And obviously for me, I see that as being the most important thing. That's what I love the most.
I think that it spreads the word. I think that it gives food a platform to shine, really, visually. And I think it allows people to interact over restaurants. You know, on Instagram, I see a post go up and then a few comments down. I see friends chatting about when they should go to that. I think it's amazing, really, with Instagram particularly, the kind of regram culture, which is that actually restaurants can organically get content. If they have a beautiful product, and they look on Instagram, they search their name, they will find other people posting beautiful photos of their food, and they can then regram and use those photos, A, to show off beautiful content from their restaurant, and also to interact with the people who are going to that restaurant. And so, you know, it's direct interaction with their customers.
I think that unlike a lot of social media where everything is instant, television has the ability to unfold a story over time. And I think that television is going to change a lot over the next few years because of social media, but it's going to be all about the story. Anybody can make, you know, can shoot things beautifully and all the rest of it, but there is something about the skill of the storyteller that makes the end product either good or bad. And so whether it's on YouTube or television, it doesn't matter, but it all comes down to the skills of the storyteller. Or on YouTube, just something that's really funny.
Exposure is everything. I think good product is key, and if you marry the two together, then absolutely it can have a massive effect. People are fickle, and once you're off their telly boxes, it's all down to you, what you can gain from the small bit of, well, I suppose in my case it was a large bit of exposure, but yeah, it's 6 months now since the Apprentice final, and there's new people out there, so it's down to me.
It's always been, you know, books or radio or TV, depending on the era, whatever medium we have for communicating is what all our great food writers and cooks have taken advantage of to get messages out to all of us. It's interesting that if you look at very early cookbooks, there's always the whole title page is a self-promotional tirade, really. You know, I am Mrs. Whoever, who has worked for Lord so-and-so and has the best confectionery experience. So people have always really tried to sell themselves as an authority and sell their book as the place to find the truth.
Kate Howell, Director of Communications at Borough Market, introduces this evening's facilitator, Sybil Kapoor.
Hand you over to award-winning journalist and broadcaster Sybil Kapoor, who in amongst her, I understand I'm allowed to say this, aren't I? She's in the depths of writing a new book, which we're all looking out for, but we're also extremely lucky that she's a regular contributor to Borough Market's Market Life magazine and has found time to help us curate this series of talks this evening. You're going to be in wonderfully safe hands, so have a great evening. Thanks for coming. Enjoy. And Sybil, over to you.
Well, thanks very much, Kate, for the really kind words. I'm a bit embarrassed. So now, luckily, I can pass it over now to the others and they can all get embarrassed. I'd like to offer a really warm welcome to both my wonderful panellists and also to all of you. You know, these talks are always great fun and I hope we're going to have fun tonight as well. So this evening, we're tackling what can only be described as an enormous subject. So we're only going to scratch the surface of this, but it is the subject of how the media works within the food world and how best you can utilise it. When I first started writing in the 1990s, the media could be divided into three areas of mass communication, and that is what the media is, mass communication. And it was the TV, the press, as in newspapers, published printed pages, nothing online then, and of course radio. Today, I don't think I'm alone in finding it both daunting and also very, very exciting how media is changing. It's changing at an incredible rate, and many of us can't even keep up with it, which is one of the reasons I wanted us to have this whole discussion. So, I think that everybody, whether you're a food producer, writer, a retailer, a chef, you need to know how to utilise the media. And so I'm going to introduce you now to our panellists. Each of them come from a different perspective on what the media is. And I'm going to let them, in a funny way, sort of introduce themselves by asking them a leading question. So I'm going to start with Pete Lawrence. Now, Pete's worked in TV for 30 years. Doesn't look like it. And he's been a major influence in actually what we've been watching on our sets. So, Pete, as a writer, broadcaster, and, of course, an award-winning TV programme maker, can you tell us a little bit about some of the cookery shows that you've produced, so who they've been and how they've changed over the years? And just to make sure it's a really big question, also, what you look for when you want to create a new series, cookery series, for your company, Hungry Gap Productions?
Okay, so I, as you say, I've worked in television for 30 years and don't just work in food programming, but I've done a lot of food programs. I tried to total it up earlier and it's over 250 hours of food shows, which is I've watched a lot of close-ups of onions being chopped over the years. And I've been lucky. I've worked with lots of sort of big names, sort of Nigella and Nigel Slater and so forth. And I would say that, as you said, absolutely the industry is changing and has changed dramatically in that time. Certainly what was popular on television 30 years ago is very different to what is being watched now. What I'm looking for always is really, really good talent, really good food talent to put on television. And I think that finding people with something really interesting to say, something unique, and something that's going to attract a broad audience is always at the top of my agenda for what I'm looking for. And also, yeah, it's really people with interesting things to say, because I think that now the bar has been set so high. I mean, they talk a lot in television about, there's two phrases. One channel calls it chop and chat, and the other calls stand and stir, which I think is more an American. But those kind of shows are few and far between, and I think that television is more demanding now and wants other types of show that are food related, whether that be campaigns or whether it's food and travel, or food and something else, you know.
Yeah, because you've done people like the Hairy Bikers, haven't you, which is completely different in a way from standing and stirring.
Yeah, I mean, they are kind of entertainment, yeah. You know, that's their forte. So it's always just trying to find that next thing that's going to be a little bit different, because there aren't many slots on TV and the competition is very high. So
you're looking for new people, unknowns, or are you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it changes all the time as to what people are looking for. But I think that's the really exciting thing, is can you either a new person, a new, you know, new television talent, or a new idea or a new way of doing food that's going to move things on a little bit. So, that's what
Brilliant.
I'm looking for.
So, next person to introduce at the end is Millie Kenny Ryder. Now, Millie, ES has cited you as one of their top 10 foodie influencers. You have you have 13,500 followers on your Instagram account. Many of you may know Millie as thoroughlymodernmillie.com. And you've branched out over the years. You've done consultancies, you've gone into photography, you've done travel books, but you're really covering a lot of different areas of social media. So I think my initial question for you is, can you explain how you first got into blogging and then why you moved into sort of other areas like Instagram?
Well, I guess I've always been a creative person, come from a very big creative family, and studied music at university. Came back to London, kind of trying to get a job, thinking I wanted to do something creative. Very difficult. Instantly thought, how am I going to make money from this? So I got a boring admin role. It paid well, but it was completely uninteresting to me. And, you know, my bosses would say to me, oh, when you're free, go on Facebook or, you know, read a book. And I thought, there must be something I can do that's slightly more interesting than going on Facebook. So I started a blog, which was quite a new medium at that point. It was about 8-9 years ago. And I think the other people who were doing it were sort of doing it as a diary. And so I thought, okay, I will document the things that I'm passionate about in London on a blog. And it started off very much as a kind of essays that I'd pore over and spend hours perfecting. And then eventually I started writing every day, talking about fringe theatre shows or little pop-up food markets, kind of city breaks abroad. And yeah, it grew. I wrote for anyone I could. I just said yes to things. I wrote for a while for Visit London, and that sort of got my name out there. And gradually got more and more opportunities. And yeah, that was a long time ago now.
But what was it? What I found very interesting when I spoke to you was actually that with Instagram, you said you realised you wanted to get nice pictures and actually to sort of make people notice. And that meant that you actually learnt or taught yourself how to really photograph well. And that in itself led then on to something else.
Yeah, I think Instagram came along sort of in a big way 3 or 4 years ago. And initially, like everyone else, I got an Instagram account to sort of post photos of my cats or, you know, my friends having a barbecue. And I guess it was when I went traveling for 5.5 months that I realized actually I could use this Instagram alongside my blog to represent what I'm doing in a more beautiful way and attract people in that way. So when I went traveling, I started concentrating a bit more on taking good photographs. And yeah, it's been amazing. Now I seem to take photos more than I write blogs. So.
And actually, people actually pay you to go in and take photographs for them, which they then use. Is that correct?
Yeah. I work really hard on always only posting beautiful content and photos that I'm really proud of. Whereas I think lots of food Instagrammers will go in and just take photos of anything that they eat every single meal. But I prefer to take a story, share a story only if it's beautiful. So I kind of worked really hard on taking beautiful photos, and then people began to want me to create beautiful photos for them, I guess, and that's where the money came in.
Of course, this is going to be a question that's going to come up later tonight, which is, can you actually make a living through social media and things like that? But we will come back to that. So the next person, who I don't think really needs an introduction, is Alana Spencer. She was the winner of The Apprentice in 2016, and she's the founder of Ridiculously Rich by Alana. So, Alana, you already had a business before you actually ever appeared on TV. Can you tell us a little bit about your working life before you entered The Apprentice and describe whether your approach to the media, including social media, changed after you won the show?
100%, yeah. So when before I went in The Apprentice, I started as a self-taught chocolatier. So I taught myself how to make chocolates, and my parents built an extension on their house. And basically, I was a grafter, so I'd make chocolates and I'd go out at the weekend and I'd sell them. And I actually applied for the junior apprentice when I was 17, so I knew the power that media would have in terms of growing a business. So I think that is always something that I wanted, but didn't get in and just carried on grafting away. In terms of social media, I did very little. It was very much, if I did a social media post, it would be a picture of one of our cakes. And actually, we've had the same cakes. They're delicious cakes, but we've had the same cakes for quite a while now. So the same pictures of cakes over and over,
how many things can you do with it?
Exactly. So social media was something I didn't really do so much. And then got in The Apprentice and everything changed. And I think when I left The Apprentice, I went back to my old thing of just posting the occasional picture of my cakes. And I spoke to Fran, who was actually one of the candidates in The Apprentice, and she was like, Alana, you need to put yourself in your social media. And that's what I've started doing now. I've tried to like put a bit of personality in my social media. But in terms of media in general, I couldn't have imagined the effect. It was crazy. Overnight, my business went from this little unknown business to, I think, 5 million people watched The Apprentice final, so it's quite a lot of exposure. And before that, it was known as Nana's, and Ridiculously Rich by Alana was the name we came up with on the show. And I had to use it. Obviously, I couldn't not rebrand.
Yeah.
And I love the brand. I love the new brand. But it was hard to say goodbye to Nana's.
Yeah.
So absolutely, the media and social media is...
Because one of the things, again, when we were discussing, you said that actually you needed to actually bring in consultants
mm-hmm.
to help you with the social media because it was such a big deal.
I haven't done that yet.
Oh, you haven't done that?
No, so I'm still doing it myself.
Oh, okay.
But I've gone... I was basically, the whole business model has changed. So when I went into The Apprentice, I think my final pitch was I want to take it to supermarkets and I want to do this and that. And I sat down with Lord Sugar after I won, and we came up with this business model of recruiting ambassadors. Mm-hmm. So basically having mini-me's across the country.
That's all doing their social media.
Yeah, so yesterday, so they've all now got their own social media page. So yesterday I trained these ambassadors. And today I've had a million messages from them saying, asking question after question. So I've got 2 weeks until my social media manager comes on board. So I'm trying to do that and manage the ambassadors at the same time. So it's a lot going on. But yeah, I will. I am getting help.
Yeah.
And but it's really important. It's taken me a while to choose the right person, because I think it's really important that they get my personality and are still able to put that in.
Yeah.
And I'm not just going to say, okay, you do my social media now, because I have to put myself in it. And without me doing a little bit of that, that won't happen.
Yeah. So our next guest is Dr. Jane Levy. And Jane is here really to give us balance and perspective as to what's going on, because we all get carried away. Jane is an academic at, amongst other places, King's College London. And she specialises in the history of food and, even more wonderfully in my mind, utopianism. And I think you must have a very different perspective on the idea of mass communication in terms of the media. So my question for you is, if you look back at the history of food, and you can limit this to the Europe if you want, because obviously it's a rather long history, have there been similar revolutions in mass communication? And how did they change our behaviour towards food? Obviously, we're just talking about food.
Okay. Well, it's a really interesting question, and I think it's interesting that you suggest that I have a very different perspective, because I think I probably don't. I just look at very similar things, at human beings in history, and often think, gosh, we haven't changed very much. So the media may have changed, but the messages and the desire to communicate with one another really hasn't. So I suppose that, you know, one of the moments where there was a huge explosion in communication about food was through cookbooks in the early 18th century, when publishing became, it was cheaper to produce books, large quantities of them. And there were lots of people who'd had jobs in private houses or claimed to have written for royalty, cooked for royalty, who started producing cookbooks that the newly becoming wealthy middle classes would buy in order to understand what the opportunities were for them to cook in their kitchens. And in some ways, it's no different to what's happened in the 20th century, as you know, we're able to have more colour pictures, or we're able to have a radio show that conveys what we can do, or a TV programme. So in many ways, we haven't changed at all.
Yes.
And one of the things that I really, really struck a chord with me with what Alana was saying was this thing that with social media, you have to put yourself into it. And I think that's actually been the case in old media as well, that some of the more successful or more remembered historical figures are the ones who really had a very clear voice, like, you know, or had good marketing, like Mrs. Beaton. Everyone talks about Mrs. Beaton, although at the time there were other much, dare I say it, better cooks, more successful
cookbook authors. Who she lifted from, like Eliza Acton and people.
Yes, exactly.
She took their stuff.
But they, you know, the promotional activities weren't in their long-term favour. So,
yes. No, I think it's absolutely fascinating. Millie, so when I wanted to start with you, but everybody now join in whatever you want to say. That doesn't include you lot yet. This is, an enormous question, and you can answer as you like. How does the online world work, and in particular in relation to Instagram? Because it sounds to me like it's constantly changing and evolving.
Yeah, I was going to say it's just changing almost every day. I feel like I go on holiday for a week and, you know, everything's different and there's a new function to kind of grasp. I guess it's different for everyone and every either individual or company, how you use it, what you decided to kind of focus on, because now there are so many different platforms, you know, it's impossible really to do all of them very well and be present on all of them unless you're giving up your life completely. But for me, with Instagram, I think, how do I say it? I think it's a way of people communicating and in quite a focused way, maybe in a way that people haven't been able to previously. It's not necessarily about who you know or who you've got the contact details for. It's about what you post and people having access to you without necessarily that kind of reputation.
But do you think it's that people are aspiring to what you're presenting to them? Is it that they want to, you know, live that life? They see a beautiful plate of something or beautiful place you're staying or whatever, and they think, wow, I want to be that.
I think there's a lot of that. I think people, certainly in my world of Instagram, there's kind of two routes. There's the personal people posting on a beach and, you know, young girls thinking, I want to look like that, I want that bikini. And then there's a kind of aspirational lifestyle of, wow, I'd love to go to that restaurant, or I'd love to take a photo like that. Because now, you know, I think restaurants are having to think about what their interiors are like or what their lighting's like if they're going to get people coming in and taking good photos that translate into return on investment, essentially.
Yeah. And what about the idea that, because I've heard the saying that, and again, I'm really a novice about all social media, so... But what I'd understood was that actually some restaurants actually develop special dishes that they know are going to photograph brilliantly, that's like a signature dish, but it's a photographic signature dish almost. Is that true?
Yeah, I think there's a kind of movement now of restaurants, certainly, whether it was intentional or not, wanting that dish. And I think what usually happens is when a new restaurant comes out or a new menu comes out, a kind of select group of Instagrammers get invited, that dish gets shoved in front of them, everyone takes a photo of that particularly photogenic dish, and that becomes, you know, the dish that everyone wants when they go there. It's kind of crazy, and there are people going to a specific restaurant just to try that one recipe because it's all over online.
And so, as a leader, do you actually do the same thing, or do you look for something else on that menu that you think actually that would be really catch people's eye or whatever, so that you're
I think you can't help but be kind of a little bit inspired by people's delicious photos online. I think there are particular things that I love the taste of, so I would always go for those on a menu over a particular photo I've seen online. But yeah, I think I am influenced by it, and particularly now that going to a restaurant is just as much for me, because of my job, about getting a good photo as it is enjoying the food.
Yeah, yeah. And it's allowed you to go into another profession, like consultancy, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, well, what was interesting is for about 6 years, I've been going to restaurants for free, which is obviously lovely, through my blog. I would, you know, almost every night I'm out at a restaurant trying something for free, and then I would write it up on my blog and I'd post photographs. But once Instagram started growing for me, it became a paid job. It wasn't anymore about going to restaurants for free. It was about choosing what restaurants I wanted to go to and kind of accepting those offers. Or if I didn't want to go to the restaurant particularly, saying that I charge for my photographs because it's advertising for them. So
that's fascinating. I think if we go to Pete, is it worth trying to get TV experience, do you think? I mean, you've got this whole thing of people sort of being paid to do shoots and things for their blogs and things like that. Is that changing how people are approaching getting TV exposure?
I think that, as you said earlier, the landscape has changed so much in the last number of years. And I think that people probably know the famously quoted Delia effect, when she mentioned a certain pan was being a little gem, and the sales of the company went from 200 to 90,000 in something like 4 months. I think that the world has moved on since then. I think that television now is aiming towards a very broad audience, and that. Social media, I think, has got a very targeted audience. So I think in terms of business, potentially social media is is a much better way if you want to promote your business, because you're going to have 80,000 followers or 10,000 followers or whatever that are into a certain brand. And if your business fits into that brand, then you've absolutely got customers waiting. Whereas television really is a pretty passive viewing experience. It's not... I've made a few shows where people have got engaged, but mostly people sit and watch it. And I'm not sure that they sit and watch it in the same way that they did back in the day when there was, you know, a Delia programme was on and there was only four channels and she said, buy this, and everyone bought it. I don't think that works like that. But I think the converse of that in television is that... And what people sometimes don't understand is that as a program maker, we are working under a set of rules. We have to work under the Ofcom rules. And we are not allowed to promote things, you know, whichever channel we work on. There's, you know, people should read them. You know, you're not allowed to give undue prominence to brands. You've got to make sure. And sometimes people get that wrong. You know, when you're making programs with people and they turn up and they're covered in their branding, you automatically think as a program maker, oh no, we're going to have to blur that, we're going to have to do that, we're going to have to cut around that. So I think that in terms of marketing, social media gives you a much more direct route to a very bespoke audience and maybe a targeted audience, whereas television does give you mass appeal, but you've got to go about it in a slightly different way, I think. I think you've got to be less overt about it. And I think where television is interesting is that if you are really interesting and if you've got great things to say and if you've got a great story and if you've got great products or whatever, people will remember that. Yeah. They might not necessarily be instantly liking you from their sofa, but television also has quite a long tail. So television programs will run for years and years and years on lots of different channels all across the world, and you don't really know how to quantify what benefit you're going to get from that. Whereas with something like Twitter or Instagram, you can instantly get some likes, and then maybe it's over 5 seconds later. So, but that's a generalization. But I think that there is, program makers definitely are under much more pressure not to advertise.
Yeah. Well, Anna, you say the example you gave us upstairs.
Yeah. So for The Apprentice, for instance, I can't write anywhere that I won The Apprentice on anything I do because it was a BBC show. So I can't use that to publicise. But actually, just following on from what you said, my experience has been that with television, when you're on their screens, when you're on people's screens, you're everything. You're the big thing at the time. But it's so fickle. As soon as that program's gone, you're old news. There's going to be a new there's going to be a new apprentice in a few months' time. In half a year. And there's only so much time that you've got to really use that exposure. But actually, with social media, if people click that like button, if people click that follow button, they're buying into you. So that's more like you're part of their family, and it's more of a together thing.
Yes.
Whereas telly, it's you know, off the back of the final of The Apprentice, I did really well. My app on my phone was going ching 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 from the online sales thing, and a few months on, you know, that's gone. And now the sales that I make on my website are having to come from my hard work in marketing and putting myself out there because I'm forgotten about.
So in other words, you have to do both. You have to do as much as possible. And in your experience then, do you think that there are some forms of media or social media more effective than others? I mean, really what you're saying is both.
Yes, it's social media in terms of the different...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Types of social media?
Well, media, and I mean, you've had exposure both with media, like in press and the newspapers and things like that.
The press can be cruel.
Yes. Yeah. And then you've also had social media. So what you're really saying, I mean...
You have to work a lot harder at media, I'd say.
Yes.
Although social media is hard work, but it's more you kind of just constantly... I'd say it's more of a roller coaster of emotions in being in the media.
Yes.
Although social media is hard too, because people can sit behind a laptop and it's a cake Facebook page, but people still feel the need to be mean to me.
Yes.
So I think it's all hard. But I would say I do find that the different types of social media, as in Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, have a very different feel to them. So Facebook, very much, if someone is mean to me on Facebook, on my cake page, people will kind of jump in and defend me, whereas that doesn't happen on Twitter. And I don't know if that's maybe how the whole social media works, but I'd say I feel like Facebook is more of a community.
Yes.
And Twitter is more of a statement thing.
Yes.
So it's, I mean, I can't get my head around it, to be
Billy,
honest.
What do you think?
I would say the same when companies sort of say to me, how can we use Facebook, Twitter and Instagram to attract different people to come to our restaurant, say, I would say put something newsworthy on Twitter, you know, 50% off today, come and get it. And then on Instagram, put a beautiful photo that people want to go and try that food in the photo. And on Facebook, you know, it's more of a kind of family, a bit more interaction. Here's our staff party, some photographs. It's kind of, I mean, I think the main thing is that people are getting more and more impatient. So that is almost definitely why Instagram is kind of soaring at the moment, because people can't be bothered to spend time writing long captions on Facebook or putting up a whole album of photos anymore. People want, you know, instantaneous recommendations. They want to just double click and click through to the website and make a booking there and then, you know, so.
It's fascinating. Jane, do you have any thoughts? What do you think is the purpose of social media today?
Well, I think my more experienced panelists have already answered that, really. But I do think it depends very much on who you are, what you're trying to achieve for yourself,
yes.
And then who your audience is. So people are selecting themselves as audiences through the media that they pay attention to.
Because one of the things that I worry about with social media, which I don't think was such a problem when we just had things like the press or less media full stop, was that actually... it's so self-selecting that you're not able to get out and actually find out more. It sort of narrows your interest down more and more because you're in a like-minded group, whereas actually what you need are new things coming in. So somebody who loves one particular type of food, for example, may never look at another site because they don't have that.
And Millie was saying something upstairs, which I think is relevant to that, because it's not just about the audience being too narrow-minded and not looking for things, but so many of the systems build ever more sophisticated algorithms that kind of narrow down your options as a user without you even really realizing it. So they will keep, it's like Amazon suggesting you buy basically the same book over and over again because you bought one, or you looked at a DIY book once and suddenly they think, oh, she's going to be so interested in DIY. So they sort of are clever and yet they're quite stupid because they could keep pushing you to the same things when the communicators on this panel are not endlessly saying the same thing. You know, they're they've got different interests and different people.
And do you find that the same with TV, with when you go to a TV channel and they've had a successful type of program, do they want you to duplicate that type of program again with somebody else?
I think that can be the case, but I also think that television has to work really, really hard now in this new world because people's attention spans are quite short. People need to think about a real commitment to an hour's TV show. I mean, you know, an hour is a long time.
Yeah.
And I thought what was interesting was the whole BBC Four slow TV kind of movement, which wasn't necessarily food, but, you know, going completely the opposite way. I mean, I've worked with ad agencies and they've said, you know, we've got to sell everything online within the first 3 or 4 seconds, you know, and you've got to get all the messages across because you've only got 6 seconds, haven't you, on certain social media that before it's gone.
Wow.
So you're trying to pack it all into 6 seconds, whereas in television, the great thing is about storytelling and being able to unfold a narrative over half an hour or an hour. But when the audience is used to everything being instant and everything being fast, that's a big ask to attract them.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the television viewing figures going down. Having said that, when we've talked about the media of history, I don't think television's going to go away in the same way that books and newspapers and radio hasn't gone away.
Yeah.
It just needs to work out what its position is in the new world. And I think with food in particular, there is so much online and there is so much available in social media. That's where I think it really does think, right, well, what else can we do?
Yeah.
Where else can we go? What's the unique thing that television can do in a food program that you can't do in 6 seconds or you can't do in one still?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it is about storytelling. It's just about who is the audience and what is the story you're trying to tell and what's the medium for that?
Yeah. And isn't it often just food really is a multi-sensory storytelling, and historically for the sort of mass communication we'd be more restricted to words only and good words able to paint a picture, then drawings, then photographs, you know, and now, you know, Instagram or whatever ways we have of making things a visual story in the absence of, you know, social media that can waft a smell at us or send us a real taste of something.
Mm.
So I don't know if there's more to come in the media options on how to get more visuals over or...
Well, I think there's already...
Scratch and sniff or something.
Already a movement towards lots more video and, you know, with Instagram, developing Instagram stories and, you know, people just wanting to become more and more involved in people's lives. I sort of wonder what is going to be next, you know. Scary.
But also, because, I mean... fall off of a lot of new forms of media is also higher because people get bored and then they're moving on to the next thing they think is fashionable.
I think, you know, everyone needs, I mean, I'm particularly talking about Instagram, but every company sort of needs an Instagram page now, whether or not it's bringing in business. If you don't have an Instagram page and, you know, someone who's interested in that restaurant looks it up on Instagram and it's not there, people sort of forget about it and think, you know, well, it's obviously not worthy of visiting because it hasn't got an Instagram page and therefore what's it all about and I can't be bothered. So.
Yeah,
I made the mistake of not having a ridiculously rich Facebook page when the final went out and someone created one and it got about 3,000 followers on the night of the final.
Whoa.
Yeah, which was quite frustrating.
Yeah.
But that was just my mistake
what
of not
did
making
you
one.
Do? Did you have to buy it off them?
No, we just changed the name of my Nana's page to Ridiculously Rich by Lana, so it was all fine. And that page is still out there. They're not doing
that's crazy
anything
that you
it.
Had to change your entire name because someone else had
got there quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's now it's just like some cheesy picture of a cake, like a cartoon picture of a cake. So it's still out there. They just don't do anything.
I think I found it actually because when I had to Google all of you, of course, you know.
Oh,
learn
no. Did you find mine?
Yes. So, I mean, what advice would each of you give to someone starting out in a business?
I think be very aware that people are going to look you up online and make judgments. So kind of look yourself up almost and create pages that you feel really represent what you're all about. and, you know, don't go wild and just post things because in the spur of the moment you feel like it. Because actually, if you are a business and you do want people to buy into you, you have to be posting stuff that, you know, truly represents you and represents you well.
Alana, what do you think? What advice would you give?
Go on a reality TV show? No. I would. So for me, the most amazing thing that's come out of going on The Apprentice is I've now got vision and I know what I'm trying to do with my business. I'm not trying to get into a supermarket, or I'm not trying to go round every place myself. I worked out a business model and I've got vision and I know where I'm trying to take my company. I really want Ridiculously Rich to be a known luxury cake brand, but a fun luxury cake brand. And I think that's really important to know where you're trying to get to, because if you don't know where you're trying to get to, then you're not really ever going to get there. So it doesn't really matter how you get there, you just need to know where you're going.
I think there was another thing you said actually to me, which was that also to be yourself. And I thought that was a really good piece of advice, because actually at the end of the day, you're creating something and you need to be always true to that. It's the same as what you're saying. You have to be true. Otherwise, if it's a false identity, it's very hard later to sustain it, I think. Pete, what would you say?
I was going to say exactly the same thing, really, that it's about authenticity and knowing what your story is.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, we probably all know people that will buy a Mars bar and tweet a picture of it and get some likes. And, you know, it's just like, it's, ultimately, if you haven't got anything to say, don't say it, is what I would say. Have something to say. Be very clear about what you want to say and channel your efforts into doing it brilliantly. That would be my advice.
I think the other thing I find very interesting is with I've noticed over time that there are some TV personalities who become almost a caricature of themselves. And I'm never quite sure whether it's them that are becoming a caricature of themselves or whether it's actually the way they're being filmed and things that makes them sort of feel that they have to behave in a particular way. What do you think?
It kind of depends who you're talking about, is what I say.
I'm not going to say. I'm sure people know who I'm talking about.
But obviously, you know, television is produced in the same way that, you know, you produce your Instagrams. You've got to know what that story is that you're trying to tell. And also, you know, I don't like saying this, but different people are brands, and they know their brand and they know what works for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to sort of respect it, really, when people really know who they are and know, you know, the worst thing in the world, I think, is you're going to go on a TV show. There's a whole team of people, producers and directors, that turn up and they say, oh, can you do this and can you do that and can you stand on your head and can you drink a glass of water? And if you say yes, that's it. You're the one that's on telly. That's going around the world. That's what people remember you for. If you are true to yourself and say, sorry, I don't do that, I will do this, then you'll get it right. You might... Yeah. You might be rubbish, your brand might be rubbish, you might not sell, but at least you've been true to who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've got the greatest of respect for the television talent in particular, but also, you know, social media talent that's got a very clear idea of who they are and what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
That's kind of how... So when I was in The Apprentice, it was... they definitely had certain roles that they wanted to fill on the show. And I didn't want to fall into any of that.
Yes.
I just wanted to be myself.
Yes.
And... I didn't think it was going to work. Week two or three, I thought, well, being myself isn't going to work. So I was obviously really happy that it went the way it did. But it's, I think they have like a set sort of structure for that show and for probably every TV show. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it is time for questions. So does anybody have any questions for any member of the panel?
So we're sitting here talking about social media, and when it all began, it was social media. It was people having Facebook accounts and posting photos of their holidays for their friends to see. I would say it's really become business media, and it's really moved on hugely from that. I just wonder what you feel about that. What do you feel about this whole business media thing? I mean, especially Alana, you know, do you kind of wish you didn't have to do all that and you could just focus on your business, or do you believe that having all these media channels is what's going to take you forward?
There's so many of them though, so I feel like it's really hard to know which one's the right one, because I can't do everything. I'd love to be able to do everything, and I suppose that's why the really large companies have got a person doing this and a person doing that. And yes, it would be easier to not have to do all these things, but then I think I'd be going back to being that grafter who was just, because that's what I was doing. I was just going out there and working really hard and making a nice wage for myself, and now it's trying to grow a brand, and there's so many different ways you can grow the brand and so many different ways you can get exposure that it's a hard one. It's a lot of work, but I think if you can get all of them right or a few of them right, then it's great exposure for the brand. So I think it's only been a good thing for me.
Jane, do you think it's a phase that we're going through, sort of more it's become commercial rather than personal? Or do you think it's something that's going to change again?
I don't know. I think that it's always, or it was ever thus, that that people who have something to say, there are lots of people who would have published a book a couple of hundred years ago who didn't care if someone else read it or not. But I think most writers would. So people do whatever they can to use the media they've got to promote what they're doing. And by having that authentic voice, then they're using the tools to get to the people they need to find.
Do you feel that partly that they're not being true to themselves in the sense that it's a commercial thing, so therefore it's should one believe in it?
The thing we all know, as you've said yourself, Alani, you've got to get somebody on board to do your social media. So as much as you are hoping that will still be your personality, the fact is, it's not your message. You're not going to be writing those posts or post it. It's not a criticism, but it's a fact.
Yeah.
So, you know, back to television, when I watch a Nigella on television, it is her. She is standing in that kitchen and she is doing whatever she's doing. But then when it's her Instagram account, I mean, she swears she does do that account herself, but you wonder.
No one does their social media themselves once they get to a certain point.
I know a lot of people that have a business account and a personal account. I think that's kind of the main way to get around it. You have the personal account to share pictures of your friends and interact with people you want to interact with, and then you have a business account to use it to your advantage, really. And you know, people who don't decide to use it to advantage, well, that's sort of silly because you can gain so much from it.
Well, and from the audience point of view, I'm not sure how much it actually matters, because you're choosing to look at these things or not. You're looking for them or not. So if it's to someone's business advantage, then why not? Good luck to them.
You wanted to say something, didn't you?
I was just going to say, I wonder what's going to happen next, because I think that we've lived through the birth of all these social media, and what was really brilliant about it was that it was pretty democratic at the beginning. Somebody in their bedroom can film something on a phone, put it online, get lots of followers, and I wonder whether we've moved beyond that democratic stage now, where it is getting harder and harder to get a number of followers, and because of the algorithms, like, you know, you've liked this, so you will like this. I wonder whether gradually people are going to get channeled narrower and narrower in terms of brands, and you know, it really does become commercial. Whereas at its core, it's a very democratic media, and I wonder whether over the next few years, whether that democracy of it will disappear, because it will be really hard to suddenly get 80,000.
My theory is it's going to get so boring at that stage that somebody else will create something else. Well, it's all linked together again. That's what I'm hoping. But
then people always come up with things. I don't know if anyone else in the room is a fan of the chicken connoisseur. It's you, the most fabulous YouTube channel. A guy who has a show that he makes called The Pengest Munch, where he goes and reviews chicken shops around London, because he thought, you know, there are all these gastronomic people talking about fancy restaurants. Who's reviewing my food and my people's food? And, you know, he's got millions of views.
Chicken
and
fans.
Yeah. And people who are just perhaps a little bit jaded about some of the other kinds of social media exposure and see that as something fresh and different and playing with the medium and playing with the social striation, really, of who does what for but whom.
More questions. So, okay, we've got right. Oh, right. Got four altogether, at least. Okay.
Definitely would recommend looking up The Chicken Connoisseur, by the way, on YouTube. So I'm probably at the risk of making myself very unpopular by saying this, but I still believe that word-of-mouth marketing is the most powerful form of marketing. And often I find with media, actually, you're just backing up what somebody else has said. So I might follow or see or be exposed to something, awareness box ticked, but actually the purchasing decision, I think word-of-mouth is probably still, even in today's world, the main
still
driver.
Fair.
I really do believe that, personally. Could be wrong.
How many of you believe that?
That what, sorry?
I love that idea, but I just think people are speaking to each other less and less and communicating over computers and phones. So word of mouth is not so
Forget
frequent.
Forget it, it's a funnel, right? It's a funnel, so it's not happening one or the other. I'm just sort of...
Yes.
But where I do think social media and media comes in is when you get that recommendation and then you go and search up that person and... You quickly look at that, you know, you scroll through all of their content, almost like a database of them on the internet, like you were saying about what look yourself up, what's out there. So how do you create something then authentically? Because at the risk of manufacturing, I mean, I think authentic content is more and more rare because you're seeing people copy, you know, other people. And then also you're at the risk, and it's interesting, it sounds like what's happened to your business model. I found that really interesting what you said about how it changed, because really you're becoming a media company. You know, if you start at the baseline, you want to create a brand, the bare minimum that you do is create a logo and a story. The maximum that you do is invest hugely in engagement across all these different channels. And at that end of the spectrum, you're basically a media company.
Obviously, the media is what shot me into people's minds, but the whole part of this, of the business model going forward, is that, it is word of mouth, because I've got an ambassador in every county. Well, I've taken on 20 initially, and that ambassador believes fully in my products, and they know that they're delicious, and they are creating their own social media page. And from that, they're shouting about it in their area. They're able to sell at food festivals and farmers markets, just like I did, with my products. And then they're also able to sell to cafes and delis. But they're the word of mouth in that area, and they can tell all their friends and family in that area. And I completely agree with you. There's only so much that, like I said, the media is fickle. There's only so much it can do for me, and I've got to take it from here. And I believe in my products, and my ambassadors believe in my products. So it is shouting about it through those people. And social media is important to keep people interested in what I'm doing, but those people are more important than my social media.
So should we have another question, actually? So Claire, where do you want to go next? There's two here and one there.
Hi, I'm curious about the position that you have about the power of hashtags, and seems to have gone bananas now that people are putting tons and tons of hashtags, to the point that Instagram's even limited, since I crashed it, to 30 hashtags that you could put on a post. And I'm wondering how you think the public is using those hashtags, or if they really have value.
I personally don't really have a problem with hashtags. I think it's good that you can't do more than 30, because then the whole page would be filled up with them. But it's just another way of getting people to see your pictures on Instagram, and it's kind of putting them into themes so that you're targeting the people that are seeing them. I think when it becomes a problem is when everyone uses the same hashtag and there's just thousands and thousands of photos and people use hashtags in the wrong way. So if you're posting a food photo and someone, you know, uses a hashtag that they think is going to get lots of people in, but it's completely unrelated, I think that's, you know, that's a shame and that will annoy people. But yeah, if you're using it in the right way, then, you know, it's just another way of drawing people into your page.
Should we move on to another question then? Who's on the front here?
Hello, I was going to ask you a question, Pete, about brands on television, because it's not long since it's been allowed that you can actually see the name of a brand or a product. And I wondered if brands approach you, or if, whether it's the chefs that say, I only use this type of butter or whatever, or how that actually works in the end, and if it's paid for coverage.
It's a huge topic, yeah. So I'll try and be precise. So generally speaking, the Ofcom rules are that you can't give undue prominence to anything. There can be no negotiation over a product going on screen. Aside to that is product placement, which is a relatively new rule. And in those circumstances, again, there's a really tight set of rules about what is allowed and what isn't allowed. In those instances, yes, companies are paying to have their product on television, but it's a collaboration between quite a lot of people, you know, in terms of an ad agency, a broadcaster wanting to have a product placement show. And the rules are, believe it or not, even more complicated on a product placement show than they are on a not. So you can pay to have a product placed, but it cannot be a form of advertising. So somebody can't say it's a good product. You can see it, but you can't say it's good. I think in terms of other things, the non-product placement shows, it's much more about yes, undue prominence, really. And I think it's much harder on a product. I mean, we all know that the appliances, it's very hard. The way that the logos are placed, it's practically impossible not to get those in shot. But I guarantee there's hardly a program goes by without a commissioner saying, can we blur that? Can we change the shot? Can we tighten it in slightly? Can we shoot it in a slightly different way? So that's a constant kind of battle. And then I think that I tend to do shows where there aren't really that many brands seen. And if you do see one, it kind of jumps out amongst everything. So it's quite hard, really. I think getting a real understanding of what the Ofcom rules are is a good starting point. And then, you know, working with the producers to try and find a way. But the rules are very clear in terms of no negotiation. You cannot influence the editorial in any way. Otherwise, the broadcaster and the producer is going to be breaking the Ofcom rules and you know, could get fined. So it's from a program maker, it's really not worth it for the price of a packet of butter. You know.
Thank you. So we've got time for one more question. Okay, so one over there.
Hi there. I've got a small startup business here locally in Wandsworth called Superbox Organic. We make healthy after-school snacks for primary school children in the surrounding boroughs. Just started recently on a very, very tight budget, shoestring, really. I love, Alana, your idea about doing the ambassadors. I've got a great product that my customers love. I've got a lot of repeats already, but it's still very small. Trying to grow it. Is there any other tips that you have for a guy like me who's trying to start up something like this, using social media, who knows nothing about social media, on a very tight budget?
To be honest, I think I probably was in the same boat. I didn't really know anything about social media. And the business model that I'm doing going forward is something that's never really been done with food before. It's kind of like, I don't like using this reference because it's not really like it, but it's the easiest way to explain it. It's like Avon, and it's not really been done with food. So I struggle to give people advice because I've just done what I've done. And so maybe if it works, just copy what I did.
Give it a go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I just ask Millie if she has any thoughts on that? Obviously, if I wanted to buy you, it would cost me a packet, I'd imagine. But is there a cheaper way?
I would say if you don't want to spend any money on it, spend time on social media, interacting with like-minded people, not getting in touch, but just kind of making people aware of you on social media. You know, I think people think that you can put up a pretty picture, put a few good hashtags on, and then it will just fly. But you actually really have to spend, you know, I spend at least an hour a day liking other people's photos, searching and, you know, interacting with people who I think will like my brand and kind of going about it that way. And it does grow gradually. You know, you comment on one person's photo and then you notice that they've, you know, commented on yours and a few of their followers have come over, and it does grow gradually.
I was just going to say, another thing that I find useful in terms of television is not using social media to say something, but using social media to listen to what people are saying. And I think one of the things we use in research all the time in television, if you go into an advanced search in Twitter and you put in some key words, it could be healthy children's meals or something, you'll suddenly get introduced to a whole community of people that are tweeting about healthy children's meals, and they're the people that then you want to sort of contact. And so if we're looking for somebody that to be in a TV show that's been in Borough Market in the last 24 hours, do an advanced Twitter search, put it to the last 3 days, put Borough Market in, refine your search geographically so that it's within a certain demographic, and suddenly you've got introduced to all these people, and that's how you can use social media for your own marketing and for your own research without actually saying anything. That you just, you find people that can then do the work for you. That's what I would say.
There's a thing called Likestagram. Have you heard of that? So it's basically does that for you just automatically. You just pay for it. I don't use it. I did on my personal one for a bit. And it basically just goes and finds people that they think would be interested in your stuff and likes their pictures. But I did this around the beginning of The Apprentice. And so then I had loads of people starting to message me like, oh my God, you're in The Apprentice and you've just liked my thing. And it was like some like 15-year-old kid. And I'm like, I can't be liking their thing. So,
I think you have to be so careful with those things because absolutely. You have no control over it. You know, they could be liking all kinds of stuff on your behalf, and suddenly, you know, you don't know where you're at.
Yeah, I don't use it anymore.
Sadly, that's all we've got time for, but hopefully you'll be able to ask more questions if you go. I know there was one more question there, so maybe ask with drinks. Just a few more words. Obviously, there's gorgeous food to eat now, along with some free alcohol and drink. There's Caribbean soul food. We've got delicious cheesy delights out there as well. And also, I think quite a few of you might like two of the books that are over there, which one of which is by Millie, which is the Cornwall travel book, and the other one is Pete's, which is Dig This Food Allotment Cookbook. And they're both great books, so do have a look, because you can buy them if you want and get them signed, and do feel free to come and chat to people afterwards if you want as well. So thank you very much for being a great audience, and thank you my panel.
Thanks for listening to the Borough Market podcast. The next Borough Talk is on Tuesday the 13th of June from 7 to 9pm and we'll be focusing on the parent trap, the challenges of children's food. Check out boroughmarket.org.uk for more information and to get your tickets, and also to subscribe to the podcast where you can hear the whole debate for free.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.